station. I'm gonna buy a ticket to ride. I'm gonna find that lady with two or three kids and sit down by her side. A ride till the sun comes up and down round about two or three times. Smoking cigarettes in her last seat. Sing the song for the people to meet and get along with it all. Where the people say y'all. I sing a song with a friend. Change the shape that I'm in and get back in the game and start playing again. I'd like to stay, but I might have to go to start over.
Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable for this Wednesday, the 8th of April. Very nice to have you with us on this morning. Our music today is that of John Prine. He died yesterday from complications of the coronavirus at 73 years old. We'll be playing his music throughout the morning. We welcome you and are very glad you were with us and that we are together with each other and we get to kind of grapple with all the news that is out there and talk about what is going on. And we appreciate you being with us. And I certainly appreciate our wonderful panelists who join us this morning. Let me introduce them, and then we'll get started. We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org. Panel at WAMC.org. WAMC's Alan Chartok is here, sir. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Joe. I just want to second what you are saying about our community, all of us together. Some people turn the radio on. Some people are here to do what they need to do. Ian Pickus and the wonderful news division, and they are great, coming in and doing what needs to happen every day. Can't say enough about them. And you, Joe, and you're coming in and being on top of all of this and arranging this wonderful program every day along with Sarah LaDuke. And, you know, it's just really something to see what happens when the pressure gets on and this wonderful radio station keeps rolling. And I want to thank you, Joe, for doing everything you're doing.
Well, thank you. And thank you for that. And thank you for all you're doing and helping us through this. It's, you know, everybody is, we're all, that is the community, and we're all together, and certainly it's nice to have this time to talk to everybody and kind of get a sense of where everybody's at and what they're thinking about as we see the headlines, which are often very, very tough to take, especially as yesterday we saw the highest death rate in New York State. So those are all tough times, and certainly there are safety in numbers when you're all together to deal with that. Times Union columnist Chris Churchill joins us as well this morning. Chris, how are you, sir?
Good. I'm very good. How are you doing?
We're fine. Very nice to have you here. Thank you for being here.
You're welcome.
We also welcome investigative reporter and UAlbany adjunct professor Rosemary Armeo. Good morning, Rosemary.
Good morning. Can you hear me?
You are coming in loud and clear.
Perfectly.
Oh, that's good.
Don't change that.
Don't touch anything.
Says,
keep it going.
I won't touch anything. My horoscope today says to take up your microphone and speak kind, memorable things. So I'm a little bit cowed by that instruction.
You certainly have a task ahead of you, don't you?
The kind part.
Well, you can certainly be kind to SUNY New Paltz communications professor and former New York State Senator Terry Gibson, who joins us. Good morning, Terry. How are you?
Good morning, Joe. I'm just fine. Thanks for having me.
Well, it's wonderful to have you on the program. We always love having you. And great to have everybody here. Let me read some headlines and we'll get started and talk about what's going on as we work our way through all of the various things and then, of course, include your letters, panel at WAMC.org. So the president on Tuesday effectively ousted the new leader of or the leader of a new panel that was charged with overseeing how his administration spends trillions of taxpayer dollars in coronavirus relief. The move is part of a push by the president against independent voices within the government that he considers disloyal. Then there was the president threatening to withhold funding from the World Health Organization, accusing it of not having been aggressive enough in confronting the virus. We touched on this yesterday, but the virus is infecting and killing black people in the U.S. at disproportionately high rates, figures from several states indicate. Mr. Trump acknowledged the disparity on Tuesday and said that the authorities were working to provide more information. They were hoping for some sort of report later in the week. Congress could move as early as this week to approve another $250 billion in aid for small businesses. The acting Navy Secretary, Thomas Modley, resigned after his firing of the captain of a stricken aircraft carrier developed into a public relations disaster. Then we'll take it where we can get it, and a rare upside to the pandemic, pollution levels in India's famously smog-choked cities, particularly New Delhi, have fallen to remarkably low levels. So we will we'll go with that news, and I guess we'll begin, Alan, with what you make of the president ousting the leader of the guy who was in charge of overseeing how the administration spends the taxpayer dollars when it comes to coronavirus relief.
Well, my first thought is, how the heck did we get this guy? What did we ever do to deserve a president who is this inept and this mean-spirited and this greedy? How did we get a guy like that? I'm sure there are so many of our listeners and the people out there who are saying the same thing. I mean, you set up a system so that somebody is watching the store, and then you fire that somebody, and we have, and we'll never really know. We will really never know who told who to resign in the case of the Navy Secretary. They look at the polls and they see that this treatment of this captain of the aircraft carrier was so bad. And then they say, well, somebody's got to take it and it can't be the president. So we'll fire somebody else. I just have no idea how we got this guy. It's making me nuts.
Rosemary.
I think we elected him, didn't we?
Okay.
Well, that's an interesting.
Go ahead, Chris. Yeah, there's that.
You know, Chris. Well, yeah. I'd like to write a reply.
Of course.
I'd like to write a reply. He lost the election by 3 million votes, Chris. Come on now. We have an electoral. We'll go in a minute. We elected him. I didn't elect him. The people of New York State didn't elect him. The people of Massachusetts and Vermont didn't elect him. A small group of people, because of the anachronism of the Electoral College, elected him. So you can say, we elected him. It's smug, in my opinion.
Well, that's how we got him.
I would say the Russians helped elect him. The Russians took advantage of the of that antiquated system and of divisions in America and of baggage by Hillary Clinton and used that to the advantage. And I think that's the real case. And moving forward, getting rid of him, we may have the same sort of problems for many of the same reasons. I think this latest firing of Mr. Fine, the inspector general, was part of an overall assault that Trump is making on congressional oversight. He was put in there specifically because of Democratic worries about how Trump would spend the money, whether he would just give it to cronies, which there's evidence already that is happening. And he, when he signed the CARES Act, he said, I'm not going to pay attention to this inspector general, and now he's acted on it. And it goes along with his ongoing campaign of revenge against inspector generals who brought him to the point of impeachment or passed the point of impeachment and federal regulations. He's said all along he's the boss of it all. He has absolute power under his interpretation of the second article, the first article of the first and second article, I guess you could say, of the Constitution. And he's just acting on that. Unstopped.
Chris.
Yeah, well, I agree with all that. I just, I would say that he's not exactly, with all the changes and all the seeming chaos in the White House, he's not exactly projecting the kind of stability and calm that you would want in a crisis like this. You know, I mean, all along with this president, there's been a resistance to listen and heed independent voices, and I think this is kind of a continuation of that. You could make a pretty good case that you know, refusal to listen to outside and independent voices is part of the reason that the administration's response to the virus has been so bad. I mean, it's kind of been a continual problem, and there's just no sign that he's going to change his style.
But doesn't it, Chris, make you a little bit suspect when a guy we know who has failed in so many businesses, who has messed everything up in his own personal life so many times, now steps forward and says to the inspector generals who are watching the way the money is spent, that is really what's getting to me.
Well, yeah, sure. It raises all sorts of red flags and alarm bells. It certainly should. I mean, whatever the reason, and you may have hit the nail on the head, but whatever the reason is, it sure looks bad. And it sure looks bad, you know, in the middle of a crisis when this money that is going to be doled out is so vital to so many people and so many businesses.
Terry.
Show?
Yes.
Yes. So I was just going to say it gets even more sinister. If you can imagine, it gets even more sinister than what we're reading, in that if you drill down and look at what's happened here, moving Sean O'Donnell, who is the current Inspector General for the EPA, over to take on the job of the now removed Glenn Fine, who was the acting Inspector General for the Pentagon. There's a theory there that because Sean O'Donnell has been critical of Trump's policies trying to remove regulations from the EPA, which he's doing right now. He's making it easier for factories and producers to pollute our water, pollute our air. Him being moved over to take over Glenn Fine's position is a way to ease Sean O'Donnell out of the way so that he can then be replaced and so they can continue to remove regulations from the EPA. So there's more going on than just this one news story. There's a lot beneath it that's happening at the same time.
And we have a new press secretary.
Oh, she's horrible. I've hated that girl for so long. 2016, she was all over CNN.
Woman.
With her always in sleeveless shirt dresses and snippy little total unquestioning defenses of Trump. She is a former birther. She said absolutely wrong things about coronavirus. I didn't think that he could do worse than Stephanie Grisham, and lo and behold, he has.
It is amazing that we have said goodbye to a press secretary who never held a press briefing.
Well, I think you have to really question, what does a press secretary for Donald Trump actually do? The traditional role of a press secretary for a president hasn't really been used since. Who was that original person that was made fun of on Saturday Night Live? I forgot him already.
Sean Spicer.
Sean Spicer. Yeah,
he was really the last actual real press secretary that did what you would expect a press secretary to do. Ever since then, it's just been a disaster, and it's just been the Trump show. And I wouldn't expect that this new Trump press secretary will last for any great length of time. What does she do? I mean, Trump goes out and controls the entire message all day long, whether it's on social media or whether it's before the cameras. There really is nothing for her to do from a practical point of view.
Someone has to go on the Sunday shows.
She's coming from the campaign, so we just assume that's just all rolling in together, right?
Right.
I mean, I don't think it'll be much of a difference, really.
Well, everything we're seeing now is just a campaign show. It's a campaign event. The daily press briefings are a campaign event. Whatever this new secretary is going to do is just going to be repeating those talking points. So there's no government representation anymore as we traditionally used to think of it.
Chris, any thoughts on this?
No, not really. I mean, it's almost irrelevant who the press secretary is. Why bother to learn their names or... You know, I mean,
it's the fourth one in 3 years. I understand.
Yeah. I mean, you know, even if she's not holding press conferences, they do somewhat play an important role behind the scenes, you know, answering questions and things if the administration is working as it should. But there's no indication that's happening now. So I don't know. It just doesn't seem that important to me.
But what we've learned is that no matter what the press secretary says, no matter which press secretary we're talking about, the president always contradicts them. He never follows whatever answer they give. So in some ways, it just makes their message more convoluted than it already is by having an additional voice.
Yeah, it would be a terrible job. I mean, I can't imagine why anybody would want the job. I mean, Sean Spicer looked, you know, constantly tortured the whole time that he had it. Every time he went out and said something, it was immediately contradicted.
He always looked like he was just like one moment away from just breaking down into tears.
You know, Rosemary just said something which caught my ear, and that had to do with the way in which a press secretary dresses, and that led to me to start thinking about the fact that we have given basically a free pass to Trump on his relationships with women. I mean, look at the Biden thing that is now being raised, right? Rosemary, I want to go to you on this, which is one woman says, okay, he did something inappropriate with me a long time ago or a while ago. And here is this president who's been sued, who we know has been married all of these times, who terrible things have been said about, and we basically let him off the hook. What do you think?
Yeah, I think, you know, I feel bad for Tara Reid because we're in an era now where we've seen the importance of listening to every woman, to not discount their charges, not to immediately say, oh, she's a money grubber or a headline grabber, that she should be listened to. But it's really hard not to think that. I find it really hard to take her seriously when we can excuse President Trump, who's more than 20 women have brought charges remarkably similar against him, and it doesn't care. He has made clear that the women he values are slender, where just like they all look like Melania's, and they're of a type, and he uses them. And it's not that he treats men who work for him a whole lot better. There just isn't that sexist appearance overtone that comes out every time. His spokesman on CNN and Fox in the 2016 election, and all of those women have gone on to post in administration, all were of a type. They were the, you know, the Fox News look. Gross. Totally gross.
I mean, Hope, I didn't realize until recently that Hope Hicks was a former Ralph Lauren model. I didn't know that.
She's stunning. Yeah. That's the main thing he likes about her.
Yeah.
If you're not beautiful, he does not listen to you.
Chris, you're about to admonish us? Go ahead.
Well, I don't know. Not admonish, but I don't think we should dismiss Tara Reid's claim by any stretch. I mean, it's a very serious allegation. There may be more serious allegations against Trump, but it's a very serious allegation, and it appears at least on the surface to be credible. There's no reason to think that it's not. I mean, you know, we may never know the truth of it.
The charges that we've seen have come in waves, like seven even against Al Franken, who's the other one who's been accused of maybe there was a rush to judgment. This is the only one of that nature against Joe Biden. Mostly he just does, you know, hugging too much. So this
right,
one is very
but
different. But yes, it does
right.
need to be looked at.
I have
agree.
To pause you all there. We have to take a break. We'll be right back after this.
My mother, my old man is another child that's grown old. If dreams were lightning, thunder were desire, this old house would have burnt down a long time ago. Make me to believe in this living is just a hard way to go.
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable for this Wednesday morning. Alan Chartok, Chris Churchill, Rosemary Armeo, and Terry Gibson join us. Very nice to have you all with us. We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. Norman writes to us with Mr. Fine gone. The Trump companies will likely get a chunk of federal recovery funds in spite of a prohibition written in by Congress. What do you think, panel?
Joe, if I could just speak to that.
Yes.
What's interesting about this is there will be a replacement for this position. Right now, the Attorney General for the Justice Department is meeting with other attorneys generals, and they're going to figure out who's going to replace this person to chair this oversight committee, because the bill that was passed with this $2 trillion requires that there be a position to chair this committee. So there will be another person in Glenn Fine's position. It'll be interesting to see who that is and how long that person lasts and how the president responds to that. But I think it's important for listeners to know that it's not as if this position is just going to go vacant. At least that's not what the bill requires.
But let's be honest about this, of course. He can always find somebody who will do his bidding in that position. And the name of the game is going to be find somebody who has done this kind of thing before, but who can be expected to toe the line, don't you think?
The guy that they're looking at right now is an inspector general for the EPA who has actually tried to put the brakes on some of the horrendous things that the administration is doing in the EPA. So it may kill two birds with one stone. Get him out of the EPA so they can continue raping the environment. And two, put in a guy who's now been shown vividly that if you don't do the right thing, I can just bounce you tomorrow.
That is all true. I mean, Sean O'Donnell is the current EPA Inspector General, and he is currently now taking over for Glenn Fine. And I do think what Rosemary just said is a valid theory that could happen. But the president did not choose Glenn Fine. He was chosen by the Council of Attorney Generals, and they are now going to go choose another one. So based on my research of this issue, the president has limits as to how he can go in and actually designate a person to do this. It's really done by the inspector generals.
Well, what makes
now,
you
that
think
doesn't that, mean he
wait,
can't
wait, wait,
fire
wait.
Another one.
Yeah, well, exactly. Exactly.
Right. But how long can we go on where he just fires every single inspector general that's chosen?
Are you
kidding? How long can that continue?
He's on his fourth press secretary.
Are you kidding?
Yeah. No, I mean, I understand. But there is a group of 27 inspector generals, most of which do not have an allegiance to this president, that do have a lot of power over this position. As we watch this closely, it's going to be interesting to see how that group clashes with the president.
Well, I'm glad you're an optimist, because I am not. Everything that I have seen from this president is if you wake up in the morning and you scratch your head, you don't like something, you fire. And that's what this guy does. And if he has a bunch of well, let's just call them AKers who are on our council, do they understand exactly what is demanded of them?
Well, the key to this is that the next time...
Loyalty is the issue here. Loyalty is the issue. The fact that Trump appoints the next guy, that's what's important to him. And he's already has established his right to, if you don't do what I want, you're out.
But he doesn't appoint the next person. That's the point I'm trying to make, is that he is not going to appoint the next person to head up this committee. It's going to be the inspector generals that do it. Now, he apparently has the power to remove them.
Did you hear his news conference yesterday? He said, we got rid of him because, you know, I've heard these and then made vague rumors about bias and discrimination. But we've put in 7-8 good recommendations. It'll be one of our guys. He's going to get his guy in there. It's all about loyalty
absolutely.
In the Trump administration.
We'll see. But what is key is that the next time Congress – the House representatives especially decides that they want to hopefully soon put together a bill that gives more money to the administration to hand out to the American people and to the American businesses. They need to put a stipulation in that bill that says that the president cannot remove this inspector general that's been put in charge of this position. They have to hold that. They have to hold him accountable to give him more money again. And not put some kind of statement in the bill that holds him accountable for not removing that person would be a huge mistake.
And what makes you think that by the time it gets to the Supreme Court of the United States, which it will, and those guys who vote 5-4 solidly for anything this president does won't say, no, Congress doesn't have the right to do that. The president has the right to fire. You know it and I know it.
Well, you're probably right, but I'm hoping that won't happen until we get to the next election.
Well, of course it's going to happen. That's who they are.
I think your horoscope, Terry, was to be very open-minded and optimistic.
Well, I'm just trying to bring some reality to the process. There is a process. There are laws and rules in place. There are a lot of people that do have power to help hold this person accountable. And we need them to step up and do their jobs. But otherwise, yes, we are in big trouble.
But they
won't. If they don't, we might as well just all give up. And I'm not willing to give up.
No, I don't think you ought to give up. But I don't think we ought to be naive about what this guy is capable of doing.
I'm not being naive.
He has broken every. He's broken every norm. He's broken every.
Yes, he has. And there's nobody that wants to get rid of him more than me. But it's important to understand how the government is structured, because the president doesn't understand how the government is structured. He has no idea how the government works. And we as American people need to understand that. Of course he doesn't care, but we need to care. And we need to educate ourselves about how this structure is put together so that we can reach out to the people that have the power and ask them to help us.
If you don't want Tinkerbell to be dead, clap your hands.
Well, I'm trying to.
God knows we want Tinkerbell to be
there. I'm trying to educate myself.
Rosemary,
if you take a look at the structure in place, there's no reason to be optimistic. The banks were put in charge of the dispensing of money to small businesses. The Treasury Department was extremely late in giving them guidances. There's not enough money to begin with, and so what the banks have ended up doing is saying, okay, if we know you, if you've done business with us, we already vet it. You can come to the front of the line. So administrative approved and top businesses are already getting in. They're already getting the money. And when it gets down to the pizza parlor in the corner, who's never had to get a loan before because there's never been anything like this, there's not going to be anything left. So the structure in place, I think the Democrats really try to put in something that would be fair to all. It's already being corrupted.
Exactly. Mark writes to us and says, good morning, panel. So now we've got a businessman, quote unquote, who's declared bankruptcy multiple times, overseeing the multi-trillion-dollar COVID response fund without oversight. God help us. Quick question. Should we worry about the federal deficit? And doesn't it always skyrocket under the fiscally conservative Republicans? I'm not criticizing the increase due to the COVID response, but even before then, .. Rosemary?
I'm laughing. I think it's a good letter. I agree with that. I don't have a response.
Chris?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, we should worry a little bit about the federal deficit, although probably not at this particular moment. But it is certainly true that everyone seems to care about the deficit when a Democrat is the president, and nobody cares at all when a Republican is the president.
If Democrats got back in, they could fix things by taking back that ridiculous tax, so-called reform of 2 years ago.
Well, the truth of the matter is that the only policies that can actually really help lift us out of this disaster right now are policies that Democrats have been talking about for a long time, including Bernie Sanders. And you're slowly starting to see Republicans and Donald Trump embrace them, because it's the only way out. If we had only considered implementing some of these policies a long time ago, we might not be in quite as bad of a fiscal shape as we are.
Such as what, Terry? Such as what?
Well, just the fact that the government is now literally handing out money to practically everyone in America in itself is clearly a Democratic policy. This is not something that Republicans would have ever embraced in the past.
All right.
I just want to point out that Bill Clinton and his Republican friends in the Congress were able to bring down the deficit to nothing. So it can be done if there is a will to do it, right? Right now, we can't do it. At the end of this whole thing, the line is, we'll figure it out. We'll tax more, we'll do this, we'll do that. But right now, you can't let people starve. That there is no question about that. Now, you could take a look at other places in the budget, not our money, a little bit of money to the WHO. You could take a look at the other places in the budget that are obscene and say, okay, but I don't know that Mitch McConnell and his crew are going to be willing to do that.
Let's go to this letter from Karen, who says, don't forget Sarah Huckabee as press secretary. She was also good/bad entertainment. I don't know how we could forget that. I don't, but thank you. Alan says, the subject line is, Los Angeles Times, hospitals say feds are seizing masks and other coronavirus supplies without a word. There's a report in the LA Times today that the federal government is intervening and taking medical supplies that have been ordered by hospitals with no word on how they should otherwise get the supplies they need. Please comment. I don't know what I would do without you. My understanding is this is a story about items that are being imported into the country from other places, correct? Does anybody know the story?
Yeah, I don't know the story. I don't know the story. I'm trying to find it right now, but
Rosemary, are you? Do you know this one?
Yeah, I know. I know some of the details of that. We were exporting things to other countries, and then now we want them back. I'm not sure that you need to know all the details. The big point here is that there is not a federal overview of distribution of supply, where it is, of the logistics of supply, and the military commanders who were in charge, for example, after Katrina or Maria, are not in place now. We just have it's all being done kind of helter-skelter and by the governors. Trump tried to defend himself yesterday saying, no, the governors just let us know when we're bidding against them and we stop. It's ridiculous. That's a delay. That's not smooth operation of a rescue mission, which is what we should be in right now.
Well, you know, the greater point here is this. This president right now is desperate to stay out of jail, to be very, very careful that he wins this next election. And you can just guess what's going on in the White House, which is every time, you know, there is this kind of need to get ahead of this curve, which is going down for him. He's losing. People are on to the guy. He's trying desperately to say, do this, do that. And sometimes they're counterindicated to what he said before. That's what this is all about. You can't forget that.
He is losing. And every time that he fires or eliminates somebody who's actually competent, he just loses even more because
Absolutely.
He just puts himself in a bigger and bigger corner. I was going to make a sarcastic comment to what Rosemary said was and just ask Rosemary if she had heard, as we all have, that Jared Kushner knows where everything is. He's got his finger on the pulse of exactly what's happening in America right
You're
now.
Right.
Didn't you hear?
Yeah, he knows more than the governor. The governor was wrong when he said he needed ventilators. Like, who is Jared talking to that Andrew Cuomo is not? You know, really ridiculous. Doesn't give you much faith in government.
Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue. We have a lot of letters. We'll get to those. We welcome yours. Panel at WAMC.org. Alan Chartok, Chris Churchill, Rosemary Armeo, and Terry Gibson make up the group this morning. We'll be back to talk to them right after this.
The lonesome friends of science say the world will end most any day. Well, if it does, then that's okay, 'cause I don't live here anyway. I live down deep inside my head, where long ago I made my bed. I get my mail in Tennessee, my wife, my dog, and my family. Now, poor planet Pluto now, he never stood a chance no how. When he got uninvited to the interplanetary dance, once a mighty planet there, now just an ordinary star.
Playing the music of John Prine this morning, who died yesterday from complications of the coronavirus, 73 years old. We go to the letters. Tom takes us to task. Enough Trump bashing. There are too many agendas that this administration is sneaking in while we fixate on this guy. Also, can we talk about how the pension guaranteed trust is in big trouble because of both prior inaction and now the pandemic? 401ks were the savior for business, and we have seen how that can work. I'm a union member, lifelong Democrat, that is watching Trump play us again with misdirection. Chris, any thoughts?
Sounds like he was doing some Trump bashing himself.
Yeah. It does, doesn't it?
Yeah, I'm kind of confused.
I was exactly right, Rosemary. I mean, you know, stop Trump bashing, and then he proceeds for the next paragraph or so to Trump bash. Unbelievable.
All right, well, now here's one that really is a bashing of us anyway. Sean says, love the panel. Wow, Gavin Newsom and Governor Cuomo giving Trump all kinds of kudos on the job he's done. Numbers are going down, and the panel still can't say a good word. I think a little positivity would really help the country.
Okay, they're getting good words, and they're getting kudos from those governors because Trump has put them on notice that without being kind to him, they will get nothing. They're being politicians. Wise, good leaders don't have to demand homage. They get it from good acts.
Now, he does make a point, Sean does, about the numbers going down, which is good news.
Well, I'm not seeing any reporting of numbers going down to a level that we should be celebrating. I think it's good news, but we need to be extremely cautious and continue doing what we're doing. And this is going to be going on for a long, long time. And those states that currently have low numbers are going to see rise in their numbers. That's what the science tells us. So we're a long way from even remotely thinking that we need to be celebrating anything. We need to be commending those people who are actually stepping up and doing the work that got us here.
And let's remember, this was a Democratic plot. This whole thing. This is a president who came pretty late to the game. Now, if the point here...
The numbers are coming down because people, in spite of lack of direction by many Republican governors and by Trump himself, are staying in. They're doing what they have to save their lives and the lives of their family. And if you want to see great action, go to someplace like New Zealand, where they haven't just flattened the curve, they've squashed it. And yes, it's much smaller and it's an island and all of those other factors. But in New Zealand, another democratic government, it's not like China where they have a dictator who could do it. They said, we are shutting down everything. We're doing it right now. Nothing opens. Nothing. Not churches, not any of our little favorite places. They're all shut down, and they're seeing the curve just disappear. Now, that I would praise. That I do praise. But Trump, no. Things are coming around because of the American people and because of people like Fauci and even our governor here and Newsom, who are doing things they should be doing.
Well, you got to go.
I would just like to say the kudos to New Zealand as well of putting out the word that both the Easter Bunny and the Tooth Fairy are essential workers. I thought that was in a time of crisis. A little bit of humor. Good for them. Go ahead.
Yeah.
I was just going to say that.
Oh, you both were going to say something. Well, let's go to Chris first.
Just to speak to what the letter writer is saying, I mean, Trump's approval ratings generally are up during this crisis. So, I mean, there is some truth to the fact that we may be a little bit out of step. Our criticism of him may be a little bit out of step with what a lot of people are thinking.
We better get Joe to go to 360, because I'll tell you right now, the numbers I'm seeing are not, Chris, his numbers increasing. They were, but right now they're in the toilet.
360 or 538. 538 has them at 44.8, which is low by most presidential standards, but is pretty high for him. Real Clear Politics has them at 47, which, again, if you look at the graph over the term of his presidency, is relatively high. I mean, he's been as low as, 30, 37. So, I mean, most presidents, a lot of presidents would be alarmed by that approval rating, but for Trump, it's pretty good.
Well, he's continuing to flaunt his superior TV ratings for his daily TV reality show. And in the midst of this horrible crisis, I just think that is disgusting. But it is kind of unnerving to look at the ratings to see how many millions of people are tuning in every day to watch these ridiculous press conferences.
Well, people,
oh,
I mean, the funny
them.
Thing about...
Yeah, I'm
I
one
mean,
of them,
I
too.
You,
I don't know how you don't
you just
watch
tune
it.
In and yell at the TV. It's cathartic.
Well, and the funny thing about bragging about the ratings, too, is that nobody has anything... Everybody is home. It's not exactly a normal situation where...
Like,
you
can't get a four share in this, like, what... Mitch writes and says, Rosemary is right. The federal government response to this pandemic doesn't give me faith in the government. I think that that's the point. Trump or the people behind the curtain want nothing more to make government ineffective. Love the panel. Thanks for all you do. Tom writes, USA has 4% of the world's population, 23% of its wealth, 25% of its COVID-19 cases, and 12% of COVID deaths. All this with the best healthcare system in the world. It does not add up.
Make America Great Again. Remember that slogan? What happened? Where is our great America that we were supposed to get again? He has failed. He has failed in every measurable statistic out there. He is a failure.
We go to this from Mary, who writes and says, someone on the panel just said the government is handing out money to pretty much anyone, close paragraph. I had heard that somehow the monies are accounted for in a way that makes it sort of a loan. Can anyone clarify this?
Yeah, they've added a 1% interest so that banks would be willing to administer and give them out. So it's basically a low-interest loan.
You're talking about for small businesses, correct?
Right, with forgiveness,
yes,
right?
Small businesses.
Yeah. Okay, let's see. Martin writes and says, I submitted my application for mail-in voting yesterday. After seeing what transpired in Wisconsin recently, I figured it may be the safest option. Besides, if it's good for POTUS 45, it's good for me too. All right.
That is an issue that I'm sure we'll be talking about in coming months. I mean, looking forward to November is what the Democratic Party ought to be doing right now. Even just trying to figure out a way to consolidate the remaining primaries in some kind of safe way that doesn't require people to go to the polls is what they should be doing now. But the state-by-state strategy of continuing to limp along is, I think, very dangerous to a positive outcome in November for Democrats.
Anybody on that? Okay.
Agree. Bernie Biden should be talking, getting this settled, get Tom Perez and Bernie and Biden into one room and solve this. It should be done this week. As soon as the Wisconsin results come in, which will be another Biden landslide.
Craig writes, I didn't understand. So when do we get results in Wisconsin?
Next week.
Okay.
Sometime this week.
Craig writes, we got Trump because both parties are owned by the corporate elite and have been deaf to the majority of Americans. Voters were desperate for a change. The Democratic Party was clueless about this. Trump, the con man, took advantage of it. Anything on that, Alan?
I think that's right.
Okay.
The Russians didn't win the election. They were there, Rosemary. You're quite right. They were there helping out around the edges. But in the end, I think that the American people had some real problems with the same old, and that's what they were voting against. Guy comes down the staircase.
Well, they sure fixed that.
Well, I could not agree with you more. It was naive, it was stupid, but they did it.
Let's see.
Well, when people feel like they have the system is corrupt and they have nothing to lose, then they'll take a risk. I mean, I don't think it was the Russians that won Trump the election. I don't think it was
Comey.
You know, I mean, when an election is as close
I'm not bitter. I'm just asking.
Yeah, when an election that was as close as that one was, you can point to 100 different things and say that might have been the tipping point. But I mean, he got as far as he did because people were just disgusted with the way things have been for the last few decades. And they're, you know, the people feel like both parties have kind of abandoned their interest and they were willing to turn to somebody like Trump.
And boy, did they learn their lesson, I hope.
We'll see. One more letter and then we'll go to a break. Hello, lovely panelists, says Carol. My question is, if the president ignores the congressional mandate to not funnel millions of dollars to his business buddies from the recovery monies, can he, once out of office, be charged with misappropriation of funds? Why or why not? Anyone know an answer to that?
Well, I suppose you could do it. I have this sinking feeling that if the Democrats win the election and the country is as polarized as it is, they're going to want to say, oh, well, you know, this is too bad, but we're going to just have to, you know, let them go now because in the interest of bringing everybody together. I hope I'm wrong, but I have a feeling I've seen it before and I'm going to see it again.
I'm still waiting for former Interior Secretary Zirkle to be charged with misappropriation of funds. He was under investigation at the time of his resignation a year ago for steering government money to companies he had a say in. Nothing has come of it. So if that's a lowly secretary, what's going to happen to a president? Nothing.
Yeah, hold your breath.
All right, let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue. We have many letters. We have much more to discuss, many topics, and a wonderful panel. Alan Chartok, Chris Churchill, Rosemary Armeo, Terry Gibson, I'm Joe Donahue. Ray Graff is next with news right after this.
Know that you're sad, know that you're lonely, you lie awake till we pass where. Want you to know that I'm leaving you all in, cause I may not get the chance again. Cold and I'm tired and I can't stop coughing long enough to tell you all of the news. Like to tell you that I'll see you though often. Often there's a word I say all on you. Often there's a word I say all on you. Tell me, where did the weekend go? Tell me, where did the weekend go? Went like thunder, fell like snow. Went like thunder, fell like snow.
Circus. 6 minutes past 10 o'clock. Welcome back to the roundtable for this Wednesday morning. Wednesday morning, it's the 8th of April, and very nice to have you all with us. Let us get to letters and to what's going on in the world. We do have this letter from Ellen, who says, I'm sorry, it is actually from Peter, who said, the hospital in my hometown closed years ago, now a condo. The hospital in the nearby city closed more recently, now empty. What does it matter if there is universal health care if there are no facilities?
It's a good point. You know, this crisis is really showing how small communities and mid-sized communities are really suffering because their local hospitals were closed recently or even years ago. We've been downsizing, consolidating hospitals for a long time, and now it's showing that we're just not prepared.
Anybody else? All right. Jerry says, where's the outrage? I'm perplexed at the ho-hum attitude given to Tara Reid's allegation against Joe Biden. I'm especially surprised by Rosemary's comparison to the way the allegations against Trump are ignored.
Well, it isn't ho-hum. I think there's a lot of angst about how to deal with them properly and in perspective. And my comparison with Trump is my own personal thing. I would like to take her more seriously. But I don't. I mean, what's the point? What is the point? I believed a whole lot of the accusers in Trump, and nothing happened. He's still there, and there's still voices in the wind. I think terror is going to end up the same way.
Well, I don't understand what you're. Yeah. I don't understand that, Rosemary. I mean, what do you mean? What is the point? You do it because it's the right thing to do. I mean,
yeah, I'm saying do it. I just don't think it'll make any difference.
Yeah, I mean, it's these things are always difficult, but it would be nice if people just approach these things a little more consistently. It just seems like people view these allegations based on whether they like the candidate or the politician's politics. I mean, her allegation is credible, and people should take it that way.
I don't disagree, Chris. I do think her allegation is credible. But yeah. I thought each of at least five of the ones of Trump's were also, and Al Franken's I didn't think were credible, and yet he was handled in a certain way. I mean, it's because things have been screwed for so long in this country, the way we deal with these kinds of cases, that they're not going to get fixed overnight.
Right. And, you know, it certainly does matter in
That's
the general election. It's kind
on.
Of getting... Yeah, it's getting glossed over now because of the coronavirus
everything
and everything that's...
Right. Everything's getting glossed over right now if it isn't coronavirus.
But you can bet this is going to resurface in the general election. And what it really helps Trump in a way because it allows him to say, well, see, everybody is as bad as I am. You know, they're all crooked. Everybody in politics is a bad character. And, you know, that's been his MO, and it has worked for him.
Well, but
so
you're not.
You
in, but
doing?
You're not.
I mean,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
Bernie too. Bernie's had his problems with women in his own campaign, saying they were discriminated against. It is true. All male politicians have this problem.
Well, you're not endorsing, but Chris,
discriminated against is different than a sexual assault, for one thing. I mean, that's a whole nother level of allegation.
Bad treatment of women, Chris. Come on.
Well, okay, but a sexual assault is more than just discrimination. It's much, much more serious. But go ahead, Alan.
No, I hope that you're not implying or saying that because there's one allegation against Joe Biden, that all of the rest of the stuff against Trump is written off because there's a second allegation. That's ridiculous. I mean, we have
I'm not saying it's written off. I just think it allows it. In a way, it keeps Democrats from being able to claim the moral high ground, right? It's not that it doesn't negate anything that Trump's been accused of, but it just allows him to say, well, you may think I'm bad, but that guy's bad, too.
Well, he's such a lying liar that he'll keep on saying anything he wants.
You know,
I mean, you can project into the future and say he's going to say this. Of course he's going to say it. But it's ridiculous and everybody knows it.
Jerry's letter, which I read, I only read the first part of. I shortened because it was longer than we normally want. But so let me just, because we're having this debate now, let me read her full letter, which is, she was started off by saying it, the ho-hum attitude. She then, in the second paragraph, says, where is the outrage that arose over Christine Blasey Ford's testimony against Kavanaugh? What about Al Franken being pushed out for the allegations, which were not as serious as Tara Reid's? Trump bragging about grabbing women. According to Reid, Joe Biden actually did it. Why is Biden given a pass? Where is the Me Too movement on this? Where is Kirsten Gillibrand? This allegation is a huge liability for Biden that could cost the Dems the election. That is the full
one. I agree with all of that. I mean, the allegation is just as serious as what Kavanaugh was accused of. It's right in the same line. I don't the fact that the one thing that has, I think, so far everyone's waiting for is for one of the major news organizations who have to be looking into this to come out with a story of their own. And I think when the New York Times, the Washington Post, or somebody does, I think that might really change things.
Oh, well, I wish that were true. It didn't stop Kavanaugh. It didn't stop Trump. If we had a society where allegations like this that examined up close resulted in any kind of consequence for the politician, we'd be in a much better place.
Well, I think regardless of what is true and what is not true, Trump is going to use this to his advantage regardless of what the truth is. We know that at some point in time. He's just going to accuse Joe Biden of being a chronic sexual harasser. He's going to do that. But the question I want to ask is, even if right now Joe Biden were to decide to embrace this, to confront it head on and come out and speak to the American public directly about it, which I think would be a good strategy. The problem is, would anybody hear him? Would anybody even know that he did that? Right now, trying to get a message out as the person running against Donald Trump from your living room is a very, very difficult thing to do.
Well, what could he say, Terry? I mean, he has said he didn't do it. I don't know what else what would he say in a speech that would say anything more than that?
Well, I don't know, but how else does he resolve this? I mean, if there are doubts about his credibility on this, if there are doubts about his truth-telling on it, he needs to deal with that. He needs to confront it.
Are you people crazy? I mean, the truth of the matter is, we have this sexual predator as the president of the United States. He's been credibly accused again and again. He's been sued. He's all the rest of it. And you're telling me.
We haven't mentioned the payoffs, but go ahead.
I mean, yeah, the payoffs and all the rest of it. That he's going to point at Joe Biden, it's ridiculous.
Well, I mean, he did this. Look, he did it. He did do it during the campaign with Hillary Clinton right after the Access Hollywood that weekend. That Access Hollywood tape came out on a Friday. He was to debate Hillary Clinton on Sunday. He got all of the women who had accused Bill Clinton, put them in his family section of the debate.
Exactly.
You know, I can't imagine that not something. I think Chris is right. I think I can't imagine that not taking place or something like that at an event. if there is a crowd in the fall.
Joe, it won't matter. He's a lying, lying, lying liar. I keep saying that. If it isn't this, he'll make something else up. He made all that other stuff about Hunter Biden and the rest of it. He is going to keep going. It won't stop him. And he's just that. That's who the guy is.
I don't disagree with you, but I mean, I'm reading Jonathan Carl's book. We're going to have Jonathan on later on. You sort of forget the timing of things of the 2016 campaign. But that tape, that came out the same day that the report came out that the Russians, of great concern that the Russians were involved in the election. The Podesta emails came out that same day. And Trump, that was like the biggest story. That tape was played over and over and over and over again. And by the end of the debate on Sunday, Republicans who had distanced themselves said that Donald Trump is out. We have to move away from him. He's kryptonite. We're saying he's still our guy. All I'm saying is that regardless, his people don't seem to be bothered by that. It worked.
But my only point is that it makes the Democrats look really hypocritical and really craven when they raise holy heck about an allegation against somebody who's a Republican and then look the other way when the allegation is made against a Democrat. I mean, there needs to be a more consistent approach and a consistent standard.
Chris, you keep seeing describing this, and to me, it looks like the difference between, you know, a dog and an elephant. This guy, Trump.
That's not a trunk. Go ahead.
Yeah, that's his foot. That's not a trunk. Trump. Okay, I've said what
I'm enjoying
say.
This. I should just sit back and listen to the man continue to argue about how women's charges of sexual abuse are handled. Chris, let me point out to you that the one person who most arguably was treated wrongly was Al Franken, a Democrat. Democrats are not hypocritical. In fact, that the problem then was that they went overboard trying to be zealous. So I think
yeah,
it's baloney what you're saying.
But there was no political cost to doing that. I mean, that's exactly the
yes,
thing.
Yes, there was. They lost a Democrat in the Senate that they're trying to, and an outspoken Trump critic. There was a huge political cost to that.
Well, you may be right, but the allegations against Biden are—that's what—and the sense you're kind of making my point, because I'm just asking for a little consistency. I just think that you. If you're going to handle it
that's
one
what I'm
way
telling
in one situation,
you,
have
there
to...
is not consistency. There is not consistency because we've mishandled these cases for so long. There is not a clear idea of how to handle them now. And that includes me, and I'm a big feminist. I don't quite know what to do about these. You
I mean,
say
Kirsten
it's credible,
Gillibrand,
and I think you're right, but how do we know that, Chris? How do we even know that?
Kirsten Gillibrand, who was one of the primary forces pushing Franken out, has endorsed Biden and hasn't said peep about these allegations. So, I mean, it's just, I don't know, I'm just repeating myself at this point, but it would just be nice if people could be at least
be nice
a little
if
bit more consistent.
Their hands to themselves.
Well, that is true, too. That's true, too.
But, you know, regardless of how this all shakes out, back to some of the points that were originally made, at the end of the day, come the general election, Donald Trump is going to stand on stage and he's going to point to Joe Biden and say, he's worse than I am. You think I'm bad? Look at everything that he's done. And he's going to bring these allegations up. He's going to talk about the Ukraine. He's going to talk about his son. And he's going to point and make Joe look just as corrupt as he is. That's his MO. That's what he's going to do. That's his strategy. And
exactly.
And we've seen that it's worked.
That's what I started.
And if he doesn't do that, he'll do. And if he doesn't do that, he'll do something else. Believe me, he'll just make some other lie up. That's why I keep saying he's a lying, lying, lying liar. Because it doesn't much matter which instance he's gonna pick, but he will continue to lie. That's what the guy is.
All right, let's go to other letters. Ed says, great panel, all valid complaints about Trump, but what are the Dems going to do about it? When will the Dems, such as Biden, ever go on the offensive? Must get out of reactive mode only. Why is Biden making nice to Trump? I don't know if he's making nice. He just had a conversation.
Well, I just think politically it's really tough to attack somebody in the middle of a crisis. It looks, you know, baldly political, and it tends to turn people off. I think Biden's in a little bit of a tricky situation. I don't, you know, if he were to come out every day and blast Trump, I think that would probably work to his disadvantage, not his advantage.
For once, you're right.
Oh,
Oh, did I say that?
About time.
Even a broken clock, you know.
once a day.
Yeah. Twice a day.
Unless it's electronic.
That's true. That is great.
You know, I was wondering about this, Rosemary. I was listening to you very carefully. I've heard you over the years. As you know, I have incredible and great respect for you.
Get ready.
But you said...
I'm ready. I'm bracing.
But the other day we were debating whether Andrew Cuomo could be nominated to be vice president, and you made a very good point. You said, nope, we women basically won't like this. He's given his word on a woman. But I also think I heard you say, Rosemary, quite a while ago, that a woman could not be elected president of the United States. Now, you can't have it both ways. I want to make sure
I got
that right. Oh, yeah. Okay. Then that's fine. You admit you were wrong. Then you admit you were wrong.
I can have it both ways. A woman cannot run on their own. You've seen it. Hillary didn't get it. All of the very capable women in the Democratic field this year didn't make it. Republicans, of course, didn't really have a field at all. They just are in a cult now. So the only way that a woman could get to the presidency is if she comes in as the vice president and something happens to the president, or possibly will try it if she serves two terms under one person and then runs on her own. We've never had that before. So there's no other way.
You know, I keep hearing from women who are writing me letters. I know I have a great risk in saying this out loud, who say, you're absolutely right about Andrew. Andrew Cuomo has proven himself to be a competent executive. He is the go-to person right now in the United States. He should be vice president. Maybe Rosemary is right that under normal circumstances, you wouldn't appoint a Well, I'd like to just finish, if you don't mind.
I'm just groaning.
Oh, well,
we've never heard. Women have never heard this before. Yes, little girl, you're going to get it. Just not right
now. Come on, cut the crap.
It's not the right time.
That's just crap.
It's so patronizing.
No, you're the patronizing person.
You're the crap.
And I am sick. You're the rat you ate the cheese. I'm telling you now that Andrew Cuomo is the person, and you can't get away with saying, patronizing this and that, because we all know what you're up to, Rosemary, and I know it very well.
What am I up to, Alan?
As soon as somebody says something you don't like, you accuse them of sexism, and that's disgusting.
Oh, my God. It is sexism to say to women constantly, as has happened since the beginning of our country, that, yes, there's nothing that precludes you from being president. It's just not going to happen now. That's just what's happening.
And you're the one who said that a woman couldn't be president, and you got to be held accountable for that, Rosemary.
I'm saying, Alan, couldn't has two different meanings. Couldn't
means
incapable of it. That's not true.
Couldn't
because they can't fight the system.
That is as sexist as anybody has ever said when you say a woman can't be president.
Okay, then I'll own it.
Good. You own it. Whoa.
Can I go home? All right.
Can I say two things just kind of tepidly?
Yeah, you go
into the water here.
You go say something. I'm going to go get my banky. Go ahead.
I think Rosemary, we've had this argument before, but I think a woman could be elected president. I mean, Hillary Clinton lost by just such a razor thin margin that I think it proves that a woman can win. And two, to Alan, you know, if you're saying Cuomo absolutely has to be the vice president, well, maybe he should be the nominee. I mean, if his leadership is so important right now during this crisis, maybe why shouldn't Joe Biden step aside? If it's so vital that Cuomo be on the ticket, I mean, it doesn't make sense to have the leader that everybody's looking to as the vice president. He should be the nominee.
Well, as long as you're talking to me, I think I should defend it. I just wrote a column on this. The fact of the matter is, this guy, Cuomo, has demonstrated himself to be real good. And a lot of people are writing to me and saying he should be the presidential candidate. It's too late. Biden has gotten all of these things. You say, well, if why doesn't he just step aside? People don't step aside that easily. Now,
I know they
Ill,
don't. I mean, I know.
Now, if he's ill, if he's ill, or if there's something that's coming up, he might do that on the second ballot, because the first ballot, they got to vote for the guy they came with. But on the second ballot, he could mm-hmm. say, could you all step aside, and could I step aside, and you'll vote for Andrew, please, those people who have pledged to me, and they might do it.
You know, we're looking at a weird situation where Biden could very easily go into that convention without the delegates that he needs. I mean, if these primaries continue to be delayed or don't happen at all, and you could end up with a situation, and you could also end up with some sort of bizarre virtual convention where all bets are off. And there is no reason other than, you know, Biden's unwillingness to step aside that Cuomo or somebody else couldn't be the nominee.
Well, and any problem in the liberal governor of New York being the nominee? You don't see that a problem for the Democrats in the same way that all of the other candidates are problematic?
Not this year. Well, I mean, maybe
But Joe Biden's not a liberal. What is he? I mean, Joe Biden's a liberal Democrat that served for President Obama. I mean, you know, he has that label too. I think the bigger issue here that Chris is raising, which I think is important, is that it's practically impossible right now for anybody who isn't in a position of power, being in elected office. By that I mean a governor, especially Governor Cuomo and all the other governors, they're out there actually doing things. They have access to the press every day. They're taking action. They're showing their leadership skills. And it's very difficult for Joe Biden or anyone else to compete against that. And it's likely to continue all the way through up till the general election, the situation where these governors and Governor Cuomo continue to get access to the media and show their leadership skills, that's going to keep happening. So I don't see how Joe Biden fights that. I don't see how he gets out in front of that and begins to speak in a way that people are paying attention. And I think the idea of him moving over and putting another person in place like Governor Cuomo is one that should be considered. And I do think it's possible. I think that the Democratic Party has the power to make these maneuvers if they should choose to do it.
I mean, I think it's even more. Yeah, I agree with you totally, Terry. But it's even more than that. It's not just that you're seeing governors lead. I mean, Cuomo, there's this thing going on with Cuomo where he's becoming almost like a national folk hero.
Absolutely.
I mean, it is weird when you have one figure who the country seems to be kind of coalescing around, and he's not the one that you're putting forward as your candidate. It's a very bizarre situation.
Bravo.
And it doesn't help that Biden looks very weak and that Biden's response to the coronavirus has not been great. I know it's hard to get your voice out there. It doesn't help that this Tara Reid stuff is circulating out there. It doesn't help when you see polls like the one that came out last week, the ABC poll that showed, you know, Biden with the enthusiasm level behind Biden to be the lowest they've ever recorded in 20 years of taking the poll. I mean, there are a lot of warning signs with Biden, and I think it kind of helps fuel this search for somebody else.
Yeah, I completely agree, and I think that the discussions behind the scene have to be going on about this right now, because the person that has the biggest microphone at this particular moment outside of Donald Trump is Andrew Cuomo. And that's not likely to change in any time soon. And I think it's a serious consideration that has to be given.
And he's got to watch himself, too. I mean, the idea, look, I've been advancing this idea for quite a while now, but I have to tell you, when he does things like throw into the budget, a thing that basically makes it almost impossible for third parties to run in New York State, that doesn't look good. And that will be raised later.
Mm-hmm. I'm not sure on a national level if that's going to really be a factor. Certainly here in the state it's a factor, but I don't know at a national level. I mean, but then again, look at all the things that Donald Trump has done during his time in the presidency that you know, make anything that Andrew may have done pale, really. I mean, it's apples and oranges, really.
And by the way, I should just say that I can't believe I'm saying some of the stuff I'm saying about the governor, since I've been highly critical of him for the last 3 or 4 years. So, but you know, this is just an amazing thing to watch what we're seeing with him every day. And I don't know. I just if I had any say in the Democratic Party, I think I would be raising the possibility at least with Joe Biden.
You wrote a column recently, Chris, that I was struck by of saying just sort of waiting. that we have this love affair with the governor, but it won't last.
Yeah, and I'm talking more about within New York State. I mean, you know, once you've already seen it with like so some of the stuff that Alan was just mentioning with the budget. There's criticism with that. There's been criticism with the upstate, downstate ventilator stuff. I mean, you know, his approval rating on this was something like 87%, and that's just that's not gonna last. But I do think New Yorkers will probably look at him in a different way forever after this, and I think the country will look at him in a different way forever after this. You know,
my sense of doom is returning as I listen to this conversation, and I don't really have a dog in this fight, because as long as a woman is a vice presidential candidate, I'm unhappy, and Biden is certainly not my first choice. But if the Democrats are going to depend on this as a strategy to win, then we are definitely not going to win. In addition to being a liberal, Cuomo has run on and boasts still of the Safe Gun Act, which is going to kill him in big gun states. He is a big proponent of gay marriage and pushed that through. These are all the things that we've been losing on. We're going to lose twice as much with him there, with a real champion in it. We're forgetting all of the bad things we've thought about him that you all have written about. And then there's the idea of switching, not just midstream, but almost at the end of the game to go to another candidate. It looks so weak and indecisive. It's unbelievable. I'm done.
Okay. I'm sorry I didn't interrupt. We just have a break I have to get to. We will be back and continue. We have Alan Chartok, Chris Churchill, Rosemary Armeo, and Terry Gibson. We welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org. Panel at WAMC.org. Panel at WAMC.org. We will continue our conversation and have our last round after this short break.
When I was a child, my family would travel down to western Kentucky, where my parents were born. And there's a backwards old town that's often remembered so many times that my memories are worn. And Daddy, won't you take me back to Muhlenberg County, down by the Green River, where paradise lay? Well, I'm sorry, my son, but you're too late in asking. Mr. Peabody's coal train has hauled it away. Well, sometimes we travel right down the Green River to the abandoned old prison down by Adrie Hill, where the air smelled like snakes and we'd shoot with our pistols, but empty pop bottles was all we would kill. And Daddy...
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Alan Chartok, Chris Churchill, Rosemary Armeo, and Terry Gibson. We have about 15 minutes left with each other, and we have a lot of letters, so we will get to as many as we possibly can in the time that we have. We go to, to Sue. Rosemary never said a woman couldn't be president. She said a woman cannot be elected on her own as president, and that the evidence backs her up, and I personally believe she is correct. Andrew Cuomo is great New York State governor, but his leadership has been extraordinary in this crisis, but is also a polarizing figure in his own, even among Democrats. We go then to John says, Biden is done. Cuomo will be nominated by acclaim, and he will pick a woman for VP.
Everybody wins.
Jeff says, I'm surrounded by Trump supporters. I love your show. To quote one of them, Nancy Pelosi is evil. Dr. Fauci and Dr. Brix should be removed from office immediately, as well as the leader of the WHO. Governor Cuomo is an idiot. This all justified because they heard it on Fox News. The Trump supporters, in my view, could no longer tolerate the liberalization of the country that brought the inclusion of the LGBT community. It could no longer tolerate a black man in the White House and any of the politics that he tried to implement. I could go on, but my point is these people will never move from their belief in Trump, no matter what he does. Anybody on that? All right. Bill says, here you go. It's game time on the roundtable. Bill says, please give each roundtable participant the chance to answer the following question. If you could ask one question of Trump at a briefing, what would it be? Do you want to think about it and come back, or are you ready to go?
I'll go.
I want to think about it.
All right, go ahead. Go ahead, Alan.
Why are you such a lying liar?
Yeah, that would go over well. That'd be fun to watch. Yeah.
What's wrong with you? Chris, do you have one?
I don't have one that jumps to mind immediately. I'd have to think about it a little bit. Just one single question.
It's a homework question, I think.
Yeah.
Terry, you got anything?
I would ask if we could use him as a guinea pig to try out all the various drugs that he suggested.
And Rosemary?
I don't believe in asking direct questions of him or in those pre-briefings. The better the question, the more he goes on the attack and doesn't answer them anyway.
All right. Maybe at another time we'll try to we'll try that question. Go ahead.
The reporters in the room are asking good questions every day. I'm not sure there's a question that hasn't been asked that deserves to be asked.
That's right.
Yeah, well, that wasn't the question. The question is, what's your one question?
Yeah.
I gave mine.
I want to know about the...
Well, I bet you saw the letter a lot earlier than I did, so you had preparation time.
I want to know the white spots under the eyes. Like, is that an eye covering? Is that what that is? And like, what makes the glow? More about the regimen.
Isn't that just from? Isn't that from wearing the goggles and the
and the tanning bed? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, all right. Okay. Guns. This is from Anthony. He's writing about Cuomo for president, but he says guns. His stance on guns could hurt him. Thank you, Rosemary, but Andrew is still my choice.
I don't think that his stance.
Wait a second.
Who
signed that? Who signed that list?
Andrew.
Andrew, okay.
It could maybe the governor. I don't know. I didn't see it last time. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, as one who was in office when he put forth the SAFE Act and voted for that, I'm very familiar with his position on guns. I don't think at a national level it's going to hurt him any more than President Obama or Joe Biden's position on guns hurt them. I think anybody who doesn't want gun control isn't going to consider voting for him anyway. I think that we're in a different time right now. I think as other states begin to deal with the same kind of crisis that New York is dealing with, they're going to be looking for a leader. And the only person that's really rising up and showing on a daily basis what a leader does right now in the spotlight is Andrew Cuomo. And I think they're going to be willing to overlook some of these other things that we would normally think were priorities in a normal time.
Yeah, I mean, Joe Biden and Andrew Cuomo have essentially the exact same position on guns, and I agree that that position could hurt them in some parts of the country, but the difference is that Andrew Cuomo could say, I've actually done it, whereas, you know, Joe Biden, it's just a position. I don't know that anybody who is going to be turned off by Andrew Cuomo on the gun issue is going to vote for Joe Biden.
Not only that, when polls are taken in the United States about guns, almost universally, people think, not universally, but a lot of people, majorities think that there are too many guns in America. We know that.
All right. Let's go to Jean, who says, does no one remember Giuliani? He was America's hero, too. I know that point has been made. We go.
Yeah, but he blew it. I mean, I haven't seen Andrew blow it yet.
Elias says, are you guys delusional? Biden has his nomination in the bag. He's ahead of Trump in all the polls. He will never relinquish that opportunity.
I agree. I think that's right. I think it's unlikely that this is going to be happening.
I do, too, because the only way this happens is if there's three ways. One, there's a major scandal that involves Biden. Two, there's a health issue. Or three, Biden just kind of agrees to it. And
all true.
I think the first two are more likely than the third, because Biden has wanted to be president for 30 years, and to be this close and give it up, I think, is unrealistic.
I think it's very likely that he will give it up. I mean, every day that he is quarantined in his living room trying to run a presidential campaign is a day that he's losing. The people are beginning to forget about him. People are beginning to lose track of what it is he stands for in the first place. He's getting no press coverage. He's not in the spotlight. He has no microphone right now.
you think it's very likely that he's just going to step aside?
I think it's likely that as time goes on and we continue to live in this strange world we're in, that that becomes a serious consideration that you'll have to make, because he's not getting the kind of attention that you need a presidential candidate to get, and it's likely to continue to be that way.
But nothing is, and that's because of the coronavirus, not because of any lack on his part.
Andrew Cuomo gets it every day, twice a day, three times a day.
But Andrew Cuomo is the governor of New York, the state most affected at this time.
Well, right now, he's America's governor.
Even Newsom isn't getting the attention.
Right now, he's America's governor. He's America's leader. He's the opposite of what Donald Trump is.
Well, I agree with that.
I mean, that's true and in a good way. But the Giuliani comparison is apt. It's a limited set of skills, an important set, and I'm very glad we have them now. But it's not enough to make you a great campaigner.
Wait. Rosemary, let me say this. I certainly don't want to get into a fight with you ever. But here is the question. But here is the question.
Too late for that, Alan.
Yeah, well, it is. But as the 2,000-year-old man said, well, you found me out. So, but we do need to at least not compare Giuliani and Andrew Cuomo. It's ridiculous. Giuliani has turned out to be, a very terrible, terrible man.
Yeah, I agree.
Oh, sure. In retrospect, no question. But did we know that at the time? I mean, it took many years for that.
No, we didn't. But we sure know it now. And we don't know that. We don't know that with Andrew. Arguably,
this is only hypothetical, the same thing could happen to Andrew Cuomo. And, you know, 20 years from now, we'll be talking about, wow, remember when we thought he could be president?
Well, anything could be.
But you could say that about anybody, right?
Exactly.
I mean, you could say that about anybody.
Exactly. Anything. You know, I mean, the fact of the matter is Giuliani blew it. He became a political prostitute. He became a terrible, terrible guy. Really, as low as you can get, that's how we got. But Andrew hasn't done that. Why are you saying, well, it could be. Well, it could be the duck will fly through my room here. But it's not happening.
I think the reason I'm making it is that how quick we are to make a judgment on who would be a good president. I mean, I've spoken about this a lot over the years. We like someone new and different and exciting, and we don't look at the qualifications. And he's doing a terrific job in this one area that he has experience in before, emergencies. But when you look at the overall record, how come he wasn't promoted for president before? The same with Barack Obama, who is a wonderful speaker. Was he ready to be president? Okay, I know a lot of our voters will say yes, he certainly was, but you don't show that from his record.
But you know, and to
Rosemary, to play devil's advocate, and again, I'll stress that I can't believe I'm pushing the Cuomo for president line. But I can't either. Who has more experience than him? I mean, who has a better resume for being president? He's been a HUD secretary. He's been governor of one of the biggest states in the country for 12 years now. I mean,
he has a good one. Don't get me wrong. I'm a Cuomo voter.
I mean, if you had to compare all the resumes of the presidential candidates, I would put Cuomo's in terms of just like pure experience for the job. His would be right at the top, wouldn't it?
Hey, it is a democracy, right? People make up their minds.
Foreign policy problem. Yes, foreign policy.
And I don't think America is quick to choose a presidential candidate. I mean, look at the primary we just went through, where it just took forever to really narrow it down to a few people, and we finally got down to Joe.
I don't know.
It's been a long process.
But I think it was made longer by just what we were talking about. Everybody said, "Oh, we need to be saved by Michael Bloomberg," and then Michael Bloomberg came in and he was really bad at the debate. We were like, "Oh, okay, we don't want Michael Bloomberg." I don't know.
It's a long process, but what we want is someone to come out and just grab us. You know, that's why first it was going to be Buttigieg or no, Beto O'Rourke, and oh, then it was going to be. We want someone to just go out and grab us the way that Obama did. That's not the best way to pick a presidential candidate.
But it turned out none of them were that good, right? I mean, they all had it
right under pressure, right? Yeah.
But the fact of the matter is. Go ahead.
Sorry. Well, I just think that presidential politics is all about timing. You know, I don't think Donald Trump would have won in any other year but 2016. You know, you could look back and say, well, maybe this candidate would have won it if he'd won at this time. And then, you know, if the coronavirus is still with us in the fall, and we're really looking for somebody who to lead us through a continuing crisis. I mean, it, in some sense, it does make sense to turn to somebody like Andrew Cuomo at that particular moment. And maybe in 4 years or 8 years or 12 years, it won't be his moment anymore. But at this particular moment, it could be.
It could be. That actually makes a lot of sense. Of course, it also would be the American way to stick with Trump, who would be the leader in the middle of the crisis. You don't want to change leaders.
But there's also the question, right? Wait, 1 second. There's also the question, if Andrew was one of those people up on the podium during the preliminary where everybody got disqualified, I don't know that we would be talking about him this way right now. So in other words,
before the crisis hit.
That's right.
Then, and so this is now.
And so that's the point, as Alphonse D'Amato once said. So that's right. That's where we are. It's timing.
We've got a long and somewhat frightening road ahead of us. And I mean, when we get past the virus, we have the economic consequences of all this. And I do think it's fair for a voter to look at Trump and to look at Biden and wonder if either one of those guys is really up to the task of kind of taking us through this. This is going to be really difficult. You know, this is not going to just disappear. You need a nimble leader, and you need somebody who's got some experience. Neither one of these guys really makes me feel good about what's to come.
Chris, do you feel at all guilty that if this comes to pass, the Republicans won't have to spend anything on opposition research? They'll just read the Times Union for the past 4 years?
Yeah.
Oh, there's that. All right. I have to, we have to go. We're out of time. My thanks to everybody.